Welcome to BBS Radio. My name is Bridget Dolgoff. I'm the host of the Urban Farm Project, live from Reno, Nevada. I wanted to give you kind of a briefing about the show, even though it is the Urban Farm Project. Hopefully in the future we'll be covering lots of ideas about farming, organic farming, biodynamic farming, issues, political issues, economics, anything that's moving our world in a new direction and the people that are doing that. When I started putting together the show, I had some issues trying to find guests. And then what I had to do was I kind of had to open myself up to spirit and allow spirit to kind of help me find some guests. And what I found was that spirit started leading me to the average people who are making integrative changes within their own life due to awakenings or inner awareness or present moment, coming into a present moment kind of sense. And I wanted to give them a stepping stool so that they could get out and do their work. So with that, my guest today is Jeremy Lopez, and you can find his bio information on the Urban Farm Project radio page, which you are probably looking at by connecting here. And hello, Jeremy. Welcome. Are you there?
I am, Bridget. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for coming on. I just wanted to kind of give people a brief how I kind of came across Jeremy. Was that Jeremy actually showed up on my radar in winter at one of the winter biodynamic meetings for Northern California. And he began an intern with Rudolf Steiner and Harald Hoven there at Rudolf Steiner for biodynamic farming. And it wasn't until about a month ago that Jeremy was in one of my classes, taking classes at Rudolf Steiner for biodynamic farming, that I had a chance to talk to Jeremy and about his story. And his story was like exactly what I was looking for somebody to be interviewed as a guest on my show. And so with that, I wanted to give Jeremy some time to talk about his story. So go ahead, Jeremy, and explain to us, like, you know, maybe like your past background and what led you into the military and that kind of stuff, and then we'll just keep moving it forward.
Okay, Bridget, thank you. Well, I grew up in Sonoma County in Northern California, and I was involved in youth sports all through high school, and kind of grew up in a military family. My father was an Annapolis graduate in the Naval Academy, and my grandfather did 30 years in the United States Navy. He came over from the Philippines. And so I kind of really had a lot of these, I guess you could say, American ideals installed in me through my youth. And it just kind of seemed like the right decision going out of high school when I think that teenagers are faced with that decision of the next step in their life. And, you know, those American ideals such as liberty and equality and individualism and democracy, they really, they were stuck in me. And so I found myself in a recruiting office, and away I went. That was in 1999. And so from 99 to 2004, I deployed to various places around the world. And, of course, I got to see the military take on a different character while I was in. It shifted from a military in the ready to a military in action. And it was very unique, and I found myself right in the thick of that. And not in the sense of being deployed to Iraq or Afghanistan, but I definitely was deployed to places around the world where my life was in danger. And, did you want me to kind of go in further as far as up to you?
Yeah.
Met you?
No, yeah, I think it's important. I think, you know, like the one point that really gripped me in your story was like, you know, your background and then the moment where you kind of had your awakening, you know, and things kind of happened for you where you kind of started to kind of question your life and kind of what was happening to you at that time, which was kind of a life or death situation as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I spent 2 years with the infantry battalion stationed out of Kaneohe, Hawaii, in the 3rd Marine Division, and I deployed to Japan and Korea. And then we had 9/11 happen. And, you know, leading up to that, I was really pursuing a career in the military. And I had found out about Marines being able to take on a special duty of working in U.S. embassies. However, I didn't have the qualifications I needed to pursue that. And so I spent a good portion of those first 2 years really devoted to obtaining those skills, with retaking tests, developing my stuff for rifle ranges, and just a lot of military skills. And I ended up being awarded the opportunity to go back to a school in Quantico, Virginia, and I passed that school. And then I found myself at NATO headquarters, where I worked at three different locations. I worked at a building called USU, which was the U.S. mission to the European Union, the U.S. mission in NATO headquarters in Brussels, Belgium, and then also the U.S. embassy. And then later, after leaving there, my second post was Tirana, Albania. And then I found myself with a couple of other temporary assignments throughout Western and Eastern Europe, and even was flown to work at a nuclear arms conference at one point for Vice President Cheney in 2004 towards the end of my service. I guess as far as an awakening experience, it happened in 2004 when I was working out of the embassy in Tirana, Albania. I became severely ill with a stomach virus, and in the middle of the night, I had a jet flown down to get me and was taken back to Lundstuhl Medical Center in Germany. And it was there that I began to really ask a lot of questions. I shared a room with a soldier who had lost a lot of his brothers in an ambush in Iraq. And it was just kind of being exposed to young men who were in combat, and I really started to realize the danger that my life was in. Given that my experiences working in the embassy, I was more dealing with kind of like, I guess you could say, waiting for the attacks to come to us. But then also, there's a really weird game that you kind of are slightly introduced to around the embassy community with counterintelligence and espionage and things like that. I wasn't by any sort involved with a lot of those operations, but given the top secret clearance that I had, I did begin to see what was taking place. And as a young adult, it really allowed my mind to imagine things that were happening or not happening. And it was kind of there I really began to start asking questions. That's just the beginning. And then you come home, and I think that every vet experience with their transition back into society is really unique. We have a lot of the common ramifications that have been in the military, but of course, the reality of their experience is really unique to the individual.
Could you go like into maybe some of the questions like you really started to ask yourself, like if you can remember any of them that might be helpful, for other people?
I can. I had an incident in the hospital. I was in one room, sharing a room with a soldier, and there was a Korean Marine who was injured in Iraq, and he was sharing that room as well. And the military wanted to come in and do this huge PR stunt and take pictures of the U.S., military staff at the hospital attending to him, and I don't know what exactly they were going to do with the article, but they moved us out of the room to do that. And it was just kind of like I didn't understand why that was happening, and I began to realize that, these political platforms were occurring. And even with all the exposure I had working at the NATO headquarters and in the embassy environment, and within the State Department, it led my mind to really wonder. And I didn't have a very good background of politics, of the economic situation throughout the world. I think like a lot of really young soldiers and women, men and women, were more in service to each other at that point because of just where we are in life. We don't really quite understand why it is we're overseas carrying loaded guns, or why it is we're overseas doing what we're doing.
Kind of maybe like a fraternity mindset with weapons.
You could say that, I guess. I mean, it's, you know, the fraternity thing, that word is always kind of strikes a chord with me, being that, you know, the bond with warriors and men and women, when I think of fraternity, that I feel like it's very, like I'm in a frat where I'm playing like beer pong or something, and, you know, we definitely have our drinking and things that occur, but we're talking about life or death situation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's really on a whole nother platform of a relationship, really tapping into the essence of life that's existing. You know, I don't know if that kind of making sense at all for you.
Yeah, no, you know, I don't really understand militaries because I haven't really been involved in military, but my dad, who raised me, was in World War II. And he was like one of the top snipers. He was in a radical situation, and we can talk about that some other time. And he had, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder. But one of the things that came out of it was his best friend, this guy named Rex, who had saved him, and my dad never got to see him again. They were like total, like, you know, probably thicker than water. I mean, thicker than blood, anything. My dad ended up looking for him for the rest of his life till he died.
Wow.
So for me, you know, that's how I understand like your guys' kind of relationship, you know, to each other and how long, you know, that relationship goes on. I mean, it may even exist, you know, past the bounds of this life experience.
And you know, just, I mean, speaking as a Marine, you know, one thing I like to make clear to people is, well, you need to understand, well, you don't need to, but I really urge people to try to understand about the psychological conditioning of a Marine is that we are primarily trained to kill. And then once you find yourself in a situation where you are intentionally loading a weapon and carrying it on you every day, you know, in my case for 3 days, every day for almost 3 years, or you have these Marines that are deployed to Iraq or Afghanistan or any of the other real conflict zones around the world, you're preparing your psyche to kill somebody. And that is ingraining with you for the rest of your life unless you take the steps to really transform that. And so, you know, it's really tough to have a breakthrough when you have constantly done that and played scenarios throughout day, you know, for such a long period. And then, you know, especially for the men and women who have experienced that in real heavy conflict zones like Iraq and Afghanistan, and then they come back, is that it's really difficult to let that go. So that, you know, when you find these, like with the post-traumatic stress disorder, and you have the hypervigilance and a lot of the other things that come along with that, is that the mindset is not a defensive mindset, to say. It goes beyond that to, you know, performing one of, you know, the worst things that a human being can do while they're here in this lifetime, which is kill another human being. So I always try to communicate that, because I know that in my psyche that was there, and it took me a long time to really acknowledge that.
Yeah, no, and I think that's, you know, when I had that brief conversation with you, you know, and I wanted you to come on my show, it was like, wow, you know, I think that you not only can embody all of this, but you can explain it, you know, so that every person that isn't in the military can understand it and also be helpful to help people who have been in the military. I think you do a really good job with crossing both borders. And I think that's probably, you know, part of your life purpose. So, okay, so let's go back to, you were talking about when you came back to America and you have to, like, integrate back into that. Can you go fast forward and talk about that a little bit?
Sure. So, you know, I was released from active duty in September of 2004, and I had the idea that I was going to use the Montgomery GI Bill and immediately hop into the local junior college in Santa Rosa, California, and pursue a career in law enforcement and eventually work my way back towards trying to apply to as a regional security officer working for the State Department. They're the special agents that head security operations for the State Department and U.S. embassies and other diplomatic posts around the world. And a lot of the former MSGs, the Marine Security Guards, are kind of, they're a perfect fit for that, given that they have the experience of working in the U.S. embassies and a lot of military training makes them a good candidate. But I quickly started running into some bumps in the road. I think it was only a matter of a month of being home, and I was involved in an altercation where I severely hurt somebody and wound up in some anger management. And it was kind of, you know, what happened out of that is, you know, it was dismissed in court, and I was given community service to teach rock climbing. And rock climbing just kind of fell in my lap, and I was at the community center for youth, for at-risk youth in Santa Rosa. And rock climbing all of a sudden became an outlet for me. And I got really involved in the climbing. And then, you know, through moving to I moved to Sacramento and was working at a local outfitter store for outdoor activities, like REI. I'm pretty sure a lot of people are familiar with REI. And then it took me to a place in Arizona, to a college. I ended up applying and being accepted to a college in northern Arizona called Prescott College. And it's a liberal arts college dedicated to the environment. And it was there that I had another awakening. It was the first time that I was really introduced to a community of people that were exploring spirituality, being connected to their natural world. You know, it was the first time I shared rooms with vegetarians and vegans. And as a Marine, I'm like, you know, what is this? it was really far out. I mean, but the thing was is that I kind of had hit a bottom already where I was willing to try anything. I was willing to look and be open to other ideas because at the time I couldn't have told you that my ideas weren't working, but looking back on it now, I think that I was intuitive enough to realize that, you know, my ideas are not working and whatever I'm doing is not helping me get through the ramifications of having been in the military. And so I began to be really open, Bridget.
Yeah. How was your family dealing? Did you have any insight or did you have any communication with your family at the time when you were kind of starting to go through these changes?
Not really. My family, grew up with a very loving family, but when it came to communication and kind of an emotional development, you know, I love them so much, but I really feel that they had lacked the proper development emotionally for themselves, and so therefore really lacked the capacity to offer me anything. They definitely had open arms, but they were still working through their own things. And it was kind of around that time, too, that my parents were separating. So amongst them going through that, they weren't really there for me to turn to.
And
to be really honest, Bridget, I wasn't ready to ask them for it. I was very isolated, and I started to pull a lot of geographics where I started moving around. So when I arrived at Prescott College, I'd stay for like a semester, and then I'd go somewhere. Like I'd find a way to keep relocating. Because as soon as somebody started to get close to that inner space within me, my way of pushing them away was to just create some other place to go to.
Yeah, I think, you know, like, I haven't lived, like, worldwide, but I've had a lot of friends of mine from India, from, like, lots of different religious backgrounds, and I've lived in Canada, and I've been around a lot of people other than Americans, and I'm just going to generalize at this point, that they handle their family lives completely different. You know, in Canada, they build these houses where, you know, like your older part of your family, your parents will live with you upstairs in a full house, you know, connected to the downstairs, and you can they can have a relationship with the grandkids, you know, and they can, it's more of a tight-knit community, more family-oriented. And I think that my personal opinion of what's happened to America is that we've lost the family dynamics and ideals, you know, as we've, you know, branched off into our, you know, own design here. And I think with people having these awakenings and being able to look at their family issues, you know, when we step out and we adopt kids or we have our own children, that, you know, we may be able to nurture them in the ways that they need to be nurtured, and that, you know, we can have a larger focus around our children so that we're there for them whenever they need us.
I couldn't agree with you more, Bridget. I feel like I see that as well.
Yeah. Okay, so you were at the college in Arizona, and you started hanging around with vegans. Continue on.
Okay, well, you know, I ended up, Prescott College has this amazing marine studies and cultural center down in Bahia de Quino Viejo, which is a small fishing village in the state of Sonora, about 10 hours south of the border if you were to go through Nogales. And then it's west of another city called Hermosillo. And I managed to work out, or I actually was invited to come back down there and design independent studies and work with the site manager and go down there for a full semester. And so I did. I went down there, and this was, I believe, 2007. And I was alone, and I really went through a tough time down there, and I started to realize that I lacked the ability to really deal. I just didn't have any tools. My toolbox was completely empty with trying to understand what it was I was going through. I had a lot of anger, and a lot of emotions started to really come up for me, and I stuck it out and finished my independent studies there, and then went back up to Prescott College, and then eventually made my way back up to Northern California, and then went back down to Prescott College and enrolled in another semester. And I didn't end up finishing that semester. I couldn't even stay because of the things that I was experiencing. And again, I tried to pull another geographic, and I ended up in Idaho, only to find myself doing the same thing again. I was working out of a lodge and living in a yurt, and at that point I'd realized that I'd really got far from getting any kind of help, and I kind of had a surrendering at that point. And I went back home to Northern California and went to the VA to ask for help. And it was there that I found out that the VA really didn't have anything that spoke to me. And this is kind of, again, where I feel very lucky. I don't know where, you know, this intuitiveness came in, but I began to really search and look for other programs and people that could kind of support my spiritual journey. And I feel very, very fortunate today that I came across some really key people. And one of them, his name was Matt McHugh. He's an Army vet of the war in Iraq. And this other gentleman named Michael O'Gorman, who formed an organization called the Farmer Veteran Coalition, which is an organization that helps men and women transition into agriculture. And Michael O'Gorman in 2008 was driving around the state of California, working out of the garage as an office of this woman in Petaluma, California, named Linda Steele. And he picked veterans up like myself and drive us to events and was trying to get this thing going. And a lot of us were volunteering on farms or just getting started. And, you know, another key organization that I ran into is the Honoring the Path of the Warrior that I met at a fundraising kind of sit-down discussion with both the Farmer Veteran Coalition and the Honoring the Path of the Warrior. And the Honoring the Path of the Warrior is out of the San Francisco Zen Center. And two women that are very, very important to me, Lee Lesser and Chris Fortin. And they offer meditation and sensory awareness techniques to post-deployed veterans. And it was there that I really began to start to just start to work through some things, and because I found some ways of dealing with what I went through that wasn't harmful, at least what I felt was harmful from what was being provided to me at the VA, such as just, you know, it giving me medications to take, and I was becoming very numb, and so I don't know.
It didn't really offer you much of a future.
It didn't. I mean, you know, there are some amazing people I met within Veteran Services, and there's still some groups. I always try to go to the local VA where I'm at, just because it's nice to be around other vets, because we can speak the same language, and we have that common bond. But I just felt like, as far as really being able to move and live the life that I imagined, kind of move forward, that I needed something else outside of the VA, and I didn't know what that was.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, you know, like, I have attempted to use some of my work, you know, like I have a background in shamanism, and I do energetic and structural medicine, and have for a long, long time. And I had approached some of the people in the VA to donate, you know, some of my time to helping, you know, veterans with post-traumatic stress disorder, and, you know, offer some energetic work and healing. And I was really shocked. Like, you know, they told me, oh, yeah, we'll call you. And no one ever called me. And I email. And I mean, some of the people that really wanted me to be there were really trying to get me in there. But then there were like a whole bunch of obstacles. You know, there were like all these other people who were involved had obstacles. So I think with everything, there's always some really good and there's some really bad, and there's some really good people and there's some really not so good people. And I think that hopefully in the future, with people, you know, telling more of your stories, may motivate the Veterans Administration to open up to, you know, other possibilities that they don't have to pay for, especially if people are volunteering their time to help the veterans.
Yeah.
So anyway, so you met the women from doing the women teaching you, your friends, and then so where did you head from there?
Well, so then, you know, as the Farmer Veteran Coalition really started to expand, which I do want to mention, they recently just opened an office in the Davis area. And it's really taken off. I mean, that, you know, to make, you know, what I'm doing now is possible because of them, that I've been awarded a Wells Fargo grant to pursue some stuff in agriculture. But just going back to the Honoring the Path of the Warrior out of the San Francisco Zen Center, and the women there, Lee and Chris, that I met, you know, I'm in constant contact with them, and we're constantly working on, you know, the things that I deal with on a daily basis, and how to break through that and have that transformative experience that I'm looking for. And, you know, so I began to participate with these groups, and I started rotating around on various organic vegetable operations in Sonoma and Solano County. And, again, I had another kind of a spiel or an incident where things were really starting to come up for me again. I started having a lot of anger that I wasn't working through. And, you know, farming kind of brought it up. And the reason that I want to share this connection to agriculture is that I found something very interesting about agriculture and the experience in the military, is that in order to farm, there's the emotional stability that's needed on top of the physical endurance that's needed. It's very unique to a certain degree of being in the military. And that alone brought up a lot of stuff, you know, that was in me, that I hadn't really, you know, that was kind of in my shadow area. And I ended up moving, after I rotated off of a farm in Sonoma County, and Judge Family Vineyards in Bennett Valley, California, I moved down to Monterey to move in with my brother. I felt like being closer to him would help me get through that, and I enrolled back in school and just started trying to work through some of that. And I was working with honoring the path of the warrior and trying to devote the time to meditation and just really trying to cultivate that transformative experience that I was looking for.
Yeah, no, I my heart goes out to you because of, you know, just like all the obstacle, you know, it's like the obstacle course, especially when you get the surprise obstacle course that you don't have any skills or training, you know, to make your way through.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and, you know, there's so much. I mean, the complexities, I think, of, you know, just not the military person faces today in society or, you know, throughout the world. There's so many, and it's so vast, and, you know, and then the multicultural aspect to it is it's so amazing to me when I really begin to think about it. And like, where does one really even begin? Like, how do we start? Like, where is the starting point or the jumping board? And, when I was working on the farms up in Sonoma County, I really started to run into the question of, like, okay, so I really feel that I'm spiritually feeling connected to what I'm doing. And this is the path. Like, I found my gift. This is my way of giving back in my lifetime. And I don't know if I can make this economically sustainable for me. And so, you know, the part of that transition of moving down to Monterey was kind of a fallback because I had the Montgomery GI Bill, which a lot of veterans use that get back in school just to get that money going, but really have no intention of, like, what they're doing in school. Which, I mean, one of the reasons we do go to school maybe is to hopefully find that out. But, that was just a question I think that a lot of us in agriculture face, too.
Yeah, I think even with the military, without the military, when I decided to go back, you know, my family kind of has lines into ranching and farming, you know, and then I ran from it. Now I'm going back to it in my way, like biodynamics. You know, it's that to me is more of like it. It encompasses everything about who I am, what I am, and how it applies to agriculture.
Yeah.
And so for me, it's been, you know, like a really hard road financially to, you know, just like stop my train and try to like reformulate a plan, moving it back to our agriculture. And the other thing that's been difficult, and I don't know if you face this yet, but now I'm moving out into the public and the community, and because I don't have my own land yet, which I hope to have in the future, and hopefully people like you will come and stay and do some biodynamic farming, is that I have to do it in settings, and I'm in a city, so I have to figure out how it all applies in a way that I can still use it and utilize it and teach what I'm learning and also build projects so I can keep my hands in the dirt. And it doesn't really include income sometimes, you know. Mm-hmm. So the bigger picture for people who are moving back into agriculture, whatever way that's going to be, is, you know, putting together, getting some land, you know, being able to put stuff up, having the money to put what you need, your structures up, and then, you know, being able to live as cost effective as possible, because farming is not a giant income. So when you decide to move towards this career path, it's all heart, and it's all about your path, and it's all about your heart.
No, I agree with you so much, Bridget, and I think that brings me to where this wider awareness, I believe, is taking place as I pursue my studies as a practitioner in biodynamics. And recently getting back into that this year in December of 2011, I should say last year, my time down in Monterey, California, I really began to look at my experiences farming and before that of moving around and at Prescott College. And, you know, I was introduced to biodynamics, and the more that I began to look into it, it seemed to fulfill the missing piece that I was looking for in my pursuit of agriculture, or like just trying to make this, you know, a career and a lifestyle. And, you know, being able to somehow find a way to get here there was a lot of, like, hoops and things that I had to jump through. So, you know, I told you I was working with the Farmer Veteran Coalition and was awarded this grant with Wells Fargo, and they want to see that used at a real, at a certified place. So, like a program, like a UC or a state level.
Yeah,
so I found this wall that I had to really be careful about the language I was using, and you know, because the North American Biodynamic Association is not, I guess you could say, in the same arena or platform as, say, the UC or state school in regard to Wells Fargo.
Well, I think it's, I think that even though, you know, biodynamics, especially in other countries like Russia, is like the predominant way that they produce agriculture, it seems like in America, it's such a young thought process, you know, and I think that we still have, you know, paid lobbyists that are, you know, driven towards industrial type agriculture that are still pushing what colleges courses should be, the curriculum, because they seem to be producing a lot of the jobs. So there's like a big gap, even though biodynamics is like, what, over 100 years old?
Yeah, I mean, it actually supersedes the organic movement.
Yeah. And I think, you know, this guy, I was talking to this guy, and I didn't know this, but and I was telling you this at the last class, but he had said that Carl Jung is seen as being 100 years before his time, and Rudolf Steiner is being seen 500 years before his time, like producing agricultural information that we are going to need for the future in order to cure our soil so that we can cultivate crops to, you know, sustain our nutritional levels so that we don't have, you know, serious disease. Isn't that mind-blowing?
I mean, it is so mind-blowing, but it's such an intelligent way of farming. And it's one of the reasons why I was attracted to it from the get-go is that, you know, not only is it trying to address the nutritional development of, like, the soil, it's trying to address the nutritional development of, like, the human being as well.
You know?
And so when we talk about the human being and we talk about, you know, these different realms or spheres of, like, you know, social aspects and cultural aspects, it's really, all of a sudden you're like, wow, you know, we're not just looking at the soil here.
Yeah, we're not going to just grow a plant that's going to produce fruit. We're looking at the whole system from start to finish, everything that encompasses planet Earth and the cosmos around it. You're like, wow, that's so enormous.
You know, you're like, you know, what is this?
I know, it's like, oh my God, it's such a giant undertaking. Some days I get like so overwhelmed, and I love like some of the stuff that Laura Liska talks about teaching phenomenology at Rudolf Steiner as well. She said, you know, she got into this work and thought, I'll have it all figured out like in a year, you know. And she said, I'm like 7 or 8 years into it, and I'm just getting started.
Well, it is. Like, you know where I'm at now here at Rudolf Steiner College, and my current mentor, Harold Hogan, who you've known longer than I have.
I'm
so lucky, Bridget. I'm like so grateful on many levels. You know, I mean, every day is really a gift, you know, to spend with Harold, you know, for the things that come up, because, you know, we could be transplanting, you know, some brassicas, and we're not talking about the actual brassica. We could be talking about social issues and other things, and it's just, you know, I feel very lucky to be here right now.
Yeah, he's one of my big reasons that I stayed, and I Laura Liska talks about that too, about how when she first came to Steiner and she looked at all the plants and stuff, she said, I just want to stay here because I want to meet the person who knows how to do that, how to grow that stuff. Because it's such an amazing, amazing thing. And one of the things that I've found, I don't know that you found, and I'm trying not to be too talkative in the middle of your story, is that the whole biodynamic movement of Northern California and some of the other, you know, organizations of people that I've met, and are so beautiful and they're so humbling, and they're very much about working through their process, their spiritual process of, you know, their anger and healing their past and confronting issues that keep them, you know, in hate and rage and anger, and really working towards opening their heart and using, you know, biodynamics as a way to do that, to actually just get started, man the shovel, you know, stop thinking about it and just get in there and get done what you need to get done, and watch yourself grow and evolve on so many different levels through that process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, it's one of the things that I you know, that I was originally attracted to was, you know, right now I'm reading The Theosophy of Rudolf Steiner, and, you know, I'm just barely into the book, and one of the things that he gets into is, you know, about the, you know, being very deliberate with our approach to our inner development. And, you know, it's not done, like, reading through this book is just, it's not done the same way as reading other books. And so, I mean, really taking the time, it's like slowing down. And, you know, like, sometimes we're not going to get those answers today. These might be answers that we're getting 40 years from now.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and it's, and I really like, you remember, what was it, Brian Gray, who taught the class on the planetary stuff? And he was saying, like, in the ancient time periods when they were using, you know, astrological influences, i.e. astrology or whatever you want to call it, astronomy, whatever your term is for it. And he was saying, like, you'd put your question out, say, to Mars, you know, the planet Mars or the astrological influence that rule that. And he said, because it's a 2-year process, it would take 2 years to get your answer. And if you put, you know, your stuff on the Saturn altar, it could be like 28 years before you got an answer. So it's like, mm-hmm. you know, it's like the long-term commitment to you asking the questions and then waiting for the answers to appear, you know.
That's funny, because when I think of, when I hear answers now, I always think about Laura Liska's in the phenomenology courses, that, you know, so in our observation we arrive at an answer only to ask another question.
Yeah, no, and but you know, the thing is, I think that's what we missed in life, you know. I think that that's why we have to go through awakening process, because that's the whole thing we missed from the beginning, was being able to sit and contemplate the universe through periods of our life so that we could get an answer. So at least in that moment, we knew the direction to head in, right? And then, you know, then when we needed another, we needed to ask the other question, and we could throw those out there, and then it helped us to move down the path a little bit more instead of, you know, the predestined path of, you know, who, what, where you should be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what are you, what are your, like, future goals now? Now that you've gotten your feet wet a little bit with the biodynamics and your internship and...
Okay, well, you know, being here, I've been here since December, late December, and, you know, one of the things that I've been working on lately is I'm trying to cultivate the courage to really sit down and dive into, you know, both the Theosophy with Rudolf Steiner and also a lot of the work of Goethe. And I think because of it being such an esoteric path, I've kind of hit some blocks as far as where I should begin. And so I feel like right now I'm really trusting of the process and being really patient with it, and that's kind of where I'm at currently with exploring biodynamics. Because the more that I read in the biodynamics, I started realizing, you know, if I really wanted to penetrate and grow this awareness and have an observation where I was beginning to really, like, you know, where I was witnessing the witnesser, I need to have a very steadfast approach to what it is I'm studying. And I just kind of, so I've been trying to find that place to really start, Bridget, and it's been a little difficult.
But you did. No, but this is the thing, is you already did start. The moment
so I'm in it, right? It's like, is the journey?
Well, the thing is I know, but I think sometimes we look for start and stop signs, right? Because that's what we're kind of accustomed to. But I think it's the commitment. you know, the moment that you sent out your little application to Steiner and your intention was behind it, it was picked up, they saw the intention in it, and then your path begun, you know, with doing this work. And I think the thing is, sometimes we have to have periods of contemplation so that we can kind of, this is how it's worked for me, or how it has worked for me, is like sometimes I get what I need. I sent the intention out there. I get it. I'm on the path. And then I need periods of rest so that I can kind of catch up with myself. Mm-hmm. Catch up with where I'm at. You know, like let my mind kind of drift and see what's showing up on the present moment radar. And then start incorporating some of the work. Because, you know, this is a thing, like I've read, you know, like I have 5 open books right now on like biodynamics, Rudolf Steiner, anthroposophical medicine, because I'm really totally into that. So it's like I pick something up and I read like 1 chapter and I'm like totally overwhelmed that I can't pick that book up for 3 weeks. So I have to pick up another one and read a chapter in that one. And then I'm like, oh my gosh. And so I have to wait for myself to catch up with myself, right? I have an old computer processor. I need like a new, you know, system here so I can process it a little bit faster.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so sometimes I think it's just a matter of catching up with myself where I'm at, you know, and I think because I grew up kind of with a military dad, even though it wasn't, you know, it wasn't like he never really talked about war. We never hung a flag out. I mean, he really kept it out of our house. We didn't even watch war movies. I didn't even see my first war movie till he showed me Schindler's List. I think when I was like 24 years old, we were on the couch watching it. And I was so hysterical, like literally hysterical, when they got to the part where they're pulling out the Jewish people's gold teeth and taking their possessions away. Like, I was so hysterical, I had to leave. I was on the floor in the kitchen bawling in hysterics, and my dad came in there, and he was shocked. He was just shocked that he realized at that point that he had sheltered us from, you know, really bad things in the world. Like, I didn't really even understand war until I was 24. Mm-hmm. So
do we ever understand war?
No, but his presence in my life, you know, was about, it's a process, you got to put your horse, then you put your cart, where you're going, what's your plan here, well, these, you got to pre-look at your mistakes of what's going to happen here, and, you know, there wasn't a lot of present moment, which helped me to survive the world, by the way, but it didn't help me to get to my life purpose, and so I'm really thankful for his approach to teaching, because that's all he knew. And I think that you may fall under that too. Like, sometimes we need to have like, okay, what's the briefing of the day, and you know, what's the structure of what's going to be. And farming's not like that, you know, like just farming in itself without the spiritual principle is like, oh, okay, so we have a hailstorm today, so we've got to go out and cover all the crops and put the animals all back in, which could take like half the day. Oh, then the sun comes out midday, then we have to take all the stuff off and then take all the animals back out. You know, so I think sometimes just the approach to agriculture is a present moment, you know, kind of thing. From, you know, where I stand. And I think that the mindset structure doesn't really work with the left brain structure, left hemisphere control. It doesn't really work that well with it, because you want, like, you know, a plan. Like a plan, please. Oh, I have to make my own? Oh, no. Is there anything else that you want to add about, like, maybe some of the most recently profound experiences that you might have had on the farm there at Steiner, or handling the animals, or with, you know, our guru, Mr. Harald Hoven, the guru of all gurus?
Well, you know, I think that being here, you know, the thing that really speaks to me the most is you can you know, and I think to anyone who's been to Ross Turner College and stepped inside the Raphael Garden, and whether you're aware of the term of the individuality of the farm and the farm as an organism, you can feel something when you step inside the garden. And it's a direct reflection of Harold Hovind and his ability as a biodynamic practitioner, you know, over the course of 20-plus years. And, you know, just that alone, and I can feel that presence and the energy within the gardens there, is enough to, for me, as an apprentice, as I mentioned earlier, to be really trusting of the process that I'm here, I'm developing the skills to be a practitioner. And one thing that I really am beginning to understand is that each farm takes on its own individuality. And as a practitioner, I don't know where I'm going to end up in the future, but I feel that I'm cultivating the skills right now to hopefully collaborate with people in the future to whatever farm that I find myself on, that I'll really be able to identify and feel how things kind of come together and what is the farm saying to me? You know, what are the cosmos telling me for where we are geographically in the world? And, you know, those are some of the things that I'm really exploring right now, and it's so amazing. I'm so grateful that I have this opportunity and ability to be studying under Harold right now and meet wonderful people like you, Bridget.
Aw, thanks so much. Well, yeah. I think biodynamics just attracts it. I think agriculture attracts good people, whether, you know, they're Midwestern, Southerners, you know, biodynamic people. We may not understand each other. We may have different gods. But, you know, we all have, like, really big hearts. I don't think you could work with the soil and plants and not have some kind of connection with something bigger than yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So just going to ask you a couple questions. Did I cover everything I needed to for you? Do you feel like every important thing that you needed to discuss, you got discussed today? You got to discuss?
I do. I feel that my needs are definitely met, Bridget. Thank you for asking.
Okay. And so I just want to thank you so much for just being a part of my first show. And I'm just really, you know, when I hear stories about people like you, it just really encourages me. And it gives me hope, you know, to keep on doing the work that I'm doing. So it kind of rolls out, you know, that rock gets thrown in the pond and it motivates a new wave of energy, right? You're like, what?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, you know, who the Jeremy that you get to experience, I mean, the only reason why, you know, who I am right now is because of people like you. I've had so many people that have helped me along the way and kind of gave me some alternatives to approach things that I was dealing with. And so I'm really excited for what you're trying to do and what you're exploring, Bridget. And I look forward to seeing how that all unfolds for us as a human race. You know?
Yeah, and you know the other thing too is like the one most important thing that I learned a long time ago from all the spiritual masters I've studied with is that you wouldn't be really where you're at and in. The people that show up into your life and the situations that come into your life are from you continuing to ask questions. What if? What now? Who am I? And allowing your heart space and your energy to open up to allow the universe to talk to you in new ways and talk to you and approach you in ways that you need inside, you know, that your heart needs and that so you have to also don't forget to pat yourself on the back for opening up and allowing, you know, the change to happen and your life to unfold as well.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to let you go so you can go ahead and hang up, and I'm just going to go ahead and close up the show, and I'll see you next weekend at the B class.
All right, Bridget. Thank you so much. Have a
Jeremy,
good day.
Have a great day. Bye-bye. All right, well, that was Jeremy Lopez, and I was so grateful to interview him. Look on our website for the in 2 weeks show, and I have another amazing guest. I'm waiting for his bio to get it up and going. I also want to make an announcement for people in the Reno area. We are having the Sun and Garden Show. It's going to be at the Reno Convention Center, March 31st through April 1st. That's in Nevada. The admission is free. Laura Papard with the Reno Psychic Institute, she puts on the psychic fair twice a year here, I think for like 18 years, has decided to put this show together, which is going to showcase green businesses across the Reno area and local business, because we're trying to have a movement here where we're buying local. And we're going to have all kinds of amazing vendors from like solar energy to farmers, maybe a little farmer's market. I know there's somebody that's going to be doing tower gardens, our local co-op. Me, I'll be there with the Urban Farm Project, and we will be having an informational booth on the kind of consulting that the Urban Farm Project is doing, and also hands-on help to get that windowsill garden up or whatever else. And we also will have educational pamphlets for the Biodynamic Associations of Northern California and the National Association, as well as memberships to get their newsletters. And we also will be carrying the Biodynamic Seed Catalog so that you can get a jump on the year and start getting your seeds to start growing your own food. That is about it on the old Urban Farm Project. And so I also have a blog. So if you go to blog.com, it's under Consciousness of Economics. And it's the Urban Farm Project blog, so you can connect with me there. And what I always tell people is grow food, create peace, and feed the world. So thanks so much for listening, and have a great day. Thanks from the Urban Farm Project.